Hey Fresh Capital listeners, this week we're breaking down Korea's largest e-commerce company, Coupang. Coupang has been labeled the Amazon of Korea, but can it live up to these lofty goals? Coupang has pioneered quick same-day and next-morning delivery of groceries and online shopping all throughout Korea. But it's unprofitable and faces fierce competition. We break it all down in this week's episode. Keep listening and enjoy. Welcome to another episode of Fresh Capital. Every week, we provide a refreshingly simple way to learn about companies and investing. My name is Dan. Joining me, fresh off our dinner last night, Albert. How are you doing?
Dan, I'm good. Big shout out to Desmond at Chef's Kitchen for giving us an excellent fried chicken meal last night. So thank you to my boy, Des.
It was very nice. I asked you to get some chips and then you came back with this giant platter of chips, fried chicken, chicken wings. It was good. It was a good chat.
It was good. Who are we talking about today, Dan?
We're talking about Coupang, which is South Korea's largest e-commerce business. It's really, really interesting because so New York Times had an article some years ago, they IPO'd last year, where they were basically saying this is sort of the Korean Amazon, the next Amazon. And it does have some things to back that up. It's the largest or best performing foreign IPO in America since Alibaba, another company that we've covered before on the pod. So I think it's a really interesting one to dive into. You can think of them as an Amazon, the largest e-commerce company. They sell apparel, electronics, footwear, food products, furniture, all sorts of other products. And they have segments including sort of product commerce, growth initiatives with a really large logistics infrastructure network built into the business. Albert, what sticks out to you when we start looking at Coupang?
I think the big thing that sticks out is their logistics business. Like they paint the picture, and this we could probably start talking about Coupang now, of physical shopping and the problems of physical shopping. And when they make it really explicit, you realize like how bad the experience of physical shopping is. Like when you go to buy something in real life, like going to the shopping mall sucks, there's heaps of people, you've got to walk around, it takes time, parking, etc. E-commerce doesn't necessarily solve any of those problems either. Like when you buy something online, you've got to wait, you know, a day, 2 days, 3 days, a week, however long to get it. It comes in, you know, all this different packaging. You've got cardboards. You know, I buy things off Amazon and it comes in a huge box when it doesn't necessarily need to. And then with that big box, it comes in a small box. And now I've got all this rubbish. I've got to wait. It's hard to return things. And then there's always trade-offs with e-commerce because maybe you don't get enough range based on the different stores because you're trying to optimize for speed of delivery or you're trying to optimize for the price. Coupang actually solves a lot of these problems. So they've built their entire business around solving the problems in e-commerce that e-commerce tried to solve for when they were trying to solve the problems in physical shopping. So they do same day or dawn delivery with a great name called Rocket Delivery. Like that's a way better name than Amazon Prime. They do zero packaging. So everything comes in bags that are then collected after they've been delivered. Their pricing is really low, so consumers don't have to trade off between same-day delivery and high pricing. Like a great example that might resonate with some of our listeners is like the Iconic. The Iconic have same-day or two-day delivery here in Australia, but their pricing is actually really high and they can command that pricing because they are the only businesses or one of the only businesses that do same-day delivery. But Coupang don't force their customers to trade off between price and delivery because they offer same-day and really cheap pricing, and they've got a huge product range. So Coupang's actually solved for a lot of the key problems that have come up with e-com.
Yeah, so I think let's start off at the high level. So their CEO, Bom Suk Kim, he sort of positioned their mission almost a decade ago, and they keep with it, that it's to create a world where customers wonder, how did I ever live without Coupang? Which I think is a really good frame to view an e-commerce business because, as you're sort of mentioning, Albert, there are some differentiating factors between you and other e-commerce providers, the Amazons and whatnot of the world. But ultimately, like, as time goes on, those differentiators will shrink. Like, for only so long can you be the quickest delivery before your competitors catch up and they're just as fast. For only so long can you offer a particular feature or type of service before your competitors copy you and also provide that service as well. But they're really trying to make sure that they can get in as quick as they can to embed themselves within their customers so that that becomes the moat more so than some of these other differentiators that we're going to talk about. And that's, you know, within, it was a couple of years ago now, they passed over 50% of Koreans had downloaded the Coupang app on their phone, which is like incredible market penetration. And the two factors which those customers, those consumers basically sort of self-reported as being most satisfied with Coupang over competitors was the speed of the delivery with their Rocket delivery and then the product range, which you just sort of mentioned there. But I think where I want to dive in a little bit, because a lot of our listeners probably aren't familiar with the Korean market, Korea is actually really, really prime for e-commerce businesses, which is what has made Coupang so successful, I think, in a short amount of time. So one of the reasons is that there's 52 million people living in the country, and for the most part, they all live in very densely populated cities, which is perfect for logistics and delivery because it's just quicker to deliver items to more people at once. A lot of people in Korea live in apartment blocks. So rather than having to take a truckload of deliveries to 20, 50 different houses all along sort of maybe 5 or 10 streets, you can just go to one apartment block and you can make every sort of delivery there. So it really makes for efficiencies. Everyone in Korea basically has high-speed internet. There's an extremely large amount of mobile phone penetration, which leads to successful conversions through the app, which Coupang has. Most people pay their taxes, gas bills, etc., with smartphones, so they're very mobile phone literate. And then if you just sort of pair all that together, Korea also has the third longest average annual work hours in the world. So they work on average about 1,900 hours a year. For context, Australians work on average about 1,600 hours a year. And the reason that is important is because it makes deliveries convenience a premium that's actually worth paying for in Korea. Like if you get home from work at 9 p.m. every day and you didn't get a chance to get your groceries, it makes grocery deliveries so much more of an impactful purchase that you're willing to pay for than, say, in Australia where you might be getting out from work at 5 or 6 o'clock.
It's the perfect kind of melting pot for e-commerce to survive. Like all those things you talked about, like high urban density areas, that's tick because it makes delivery really easy. Like strong mobile and digital penetration, like tick, like when you've got a lot of customers using mobile phones, it just makes things substantially easier to penetrate the market. Because it's like highly urbanized, they can build logistics really easily as well because, you know, you can build delivery centers in every city or just outside cities to enable their delivery, which is what they're doing.
I think about 70% of South Korea's population are within 7 miles of a Coupang logistics center, which
unbelievable.
Is crazy.
Unbelievable. That would never happen in Australia because of how large the country is. And I guess the last thing you touched on is like smartphones. Like when you're, like, for lack of a better word, a digital native and you're living on a smartphone, and you're paying bills and, you know, you're buying things and you're living your life off, you know, the infrastructure that a smartphone provides. Like it just means that this population is ripe. The other thing, you know, worth mentioning is like they've got a pretty high level of disposable income. Like in Korea, wages are relatively high compared to other Eastern or Asian countries, which then means there's a higher appetite to spend, which, you know, all these things are what people look at China and hope that China is going to become.
So there's one sort of, as we sort of go from the macro into what Coupang does as a business, there's one thing I wanted to focus on, which you mentioned, Albert, which was this sort of dawn service delivery, which if you sort of view it as a product, it's a really interesting one to dive into. Why did Coupang, you know, really start going into this dawn delivery as opposed to this 24-hour delivery or something else? They found that a third of their orders come in between 10 p.m. and midnight. And it's funny because I think that correlates with the use of mobile phones, because you can imagine people sitting in bed just on their mobile phones browsing.
It must also be work hours, right? If you're talking about they work really long, you know, they probably clock off work around 9, 10 p.m. And they're looking for either food to eat or food for the next day.
And so exactly right. And if you think about through that frame, which we mentioned, their mission, how can they be, you know, how can customers think, how did we live without Coupang? They thought, well, the best experience we can possibly have for these customers making an order between 10 p.m. and midnight is for them to make that order, fall asleep, and wake up the next day and it's at their door delivered. And so that's what they really started focusing on, started executing on. So they now have this really robust dawn delivery system, which, like, the CEO was sort of talking, like, you know, if you got a work project and your printer ran out of ink, you could have ink delivered to your door by 7 a.m. the next day. If you forgot to buy groceries, you could have food, breakfast. If it's someone's birthday the next day, you could have a freshly baked cake delivered to the door by 7 a.m. So I think that's a really interesting differentiator. It probably can't happen in other places around the world. Like, if I think of Australia, Albert, as you mentioned, it's probably not feasible. If you've got a logistics sort of freight center for Amazon, you know, about an hour out of Sydney, I think it's just not possible that it's going to come in time, compared to in Korea, where it's 7 miles away to the nearest center and they can just sort of deliver it really, really quickly. It reminds me, Albert, and this is why I love doing the pod, because you can see parallels across businesses. In our Domino's episode, which surprisingly was a very tech-savvy, logistics-savvy business, you know, their whole scheme was about having their storefronts all within a 10-minute radius of people who can make orders. That's why, you know, Domino's are packed in so many areas, because they want to make sure they can deliver the pizza within 10 minutes. Similar mindset of how Coupang is making sure it can make its deliveries as quick as possible to its customers.
Just reminds me of the Domino's that was on campus. Like, ANU had a pretty heavy, like, residential population with, you know, almost 50% of students living on campus, and there was a domino smack bang in the middle. I think the other thing to draw out with Coupang's, you know, dawn delivery, you know, if you want to get a cake and have it delivered the next day at 7 a.m., is that this is the key point that makes Coupang so effective, is that consumers aren't trading off on price and they're not paying premium for that delivery. Like, normally, if you wanted to get a cake delivered, you'd have to pay, you know, extra money to get the cake made and then get the cake delivered by that particular time frame, where Coupang doesn't force customers to do that. Like, they just provide the service as part of their kind of mission and rocket delivery. I think that's key to becoming, how did I live without this product?
And there is technology which drives behind the scenes. So they have to use a lot of machine learning, and Domino's did this as well, to predict demand in certain areas, because they need to make sure that they're stockpiling the right goods in the right warehouses so they can make those really quick deliveries. So cakes, I think, I'm not sure how machine learning is going to predict that one, but, you know, maybe over time, you're buying birthday cakes for the same people year after year. So after several years, the machine sort of learns what days people are picking up cakes, but it obviously works for all sorts of other goods. Particularly as people start making groceries and other things more weekly or daily habits, a function which they input into this platform.
For sure. And then they don't just do groceries. Like, Coupang have the largest range of products of any e-commerce site. They talk about, specifically in Korea, in their IPO document, their S1, they talk about they have the largest number of SKUs, like stock keeping units. And if you work in retail, you know what a SKU is. It's like a different individual product. So a black t-shirt will have its own SKU. A red t-shirt will have its own SKU. They have the broadest product range of any other e-commerce player. So you can get things delivered quickly at a low cost with the broadest range, you know, ranging from groceries. You can get groceries delivered to TVs. You can get toothpaste. You can get furniture. You can get shoes. Like, Coupang have got it all, which makes them such a great player in the Korean market.
I was actually browsing them this morning, just as we're doing some research for this episode, Albert. You can rent cars. You can rent houses. Like, they've got a really, really broad array of things, which they've just sort of built in to the platform. All right. I think people get the idea of what Coupang is, what it offers, what it delivers. Albert, where do you want to go to next?
I think it's probably just worth talking about how they do this. Like, how do they do it? You know, we talked about a high level, they're building delivery centers or because of how Korea is structured as a market that they're enabled to do this. But what Coupang have done is they've invested to build delivery and logistics infrastructure. So they've got incredible delivery centers outside of regional areas within cities that enable them to then deliver what people order at scale incredibly quickly. Like, it's not just the physical delivery centers. They've also built the technology infrastructure to know if someone is in, you know, Seoul and they've placed an order, then the optimum place for you to fulfill that order is this particular distribution center. Rather than in Australia, you've only got a handful of delivery centers. So Amazon have got a delivery center in Western Sydney. So anyone who delivers or anyone who buys from, you know, Amazon this particular area, or even on the East Coast, I believe, it always gets fulfilled from Western Sydney. So it might get, you know, couriered to Canberra, or it might get, you know, shipped or freighted to Brisbane, but their distribution centers here. Coupang have taken that model and done it very fragmented so that there is distribution centers close to every city with multiple distribution centers in different cities, and then build the infrastructure that connects the consumer, the distribution centers, and their platform.
I think another big differentiator is when you talk about logistics services, there's a really, there's sort of a critical term, which is last mile delivery. Because, you know, in some ways it is quite easy to ship something from country A to country B going over thousands of miles compared to those last couple of miles to get it from that distribution center to, or the port to a particular house. Because that's, you know, quite a specific, quite a finicky task to do. And where Amazon and some of these other players have gone, particularly in certain regions like Australia and like the US, is they leverage other providers like UPS, like Australian Post, to provide that last mile service. There's a downside to that. And that downside is, as we talked about when we talk about companies owning the full stack of the supply chain, and that's that you can't assure quality throughout that chain. Like, a UPS guy could drop kick your box over the fence into your yard and your electronics is now broken. That's not Amazon's fault, it's UPS's fault, but Amazon, to a large extent, can't control that quality because they're not owners of the UPS truck. Coupang decided to go another way, and it's really interesting because they were going to IPO several years ago, and the CEO decided, we're not actually ready for this, pulled the plug on it. And one of the reasons was they were much more Amazon style back then, and they decided that they were going to instead invest in the internal expertise, having their own internal freight delivery drivers, et cetera, so they can much easily control the stack. And the reason why you don't go out to IPO and then make that change is once you're a public company, very, very hard to change what you do as a business. As a private company, much easier, much more agile. And so what that looks like now is they've got a fleet of over, you know, 15,000 full-time couriers. And what sets them apart is usually these couriers would be wearing, you know, gray jackets, wearing white, driving white trucks, whereas they're all fully branded. They're known as Coupang Friends. They wear really bright uniforms. They cruise around in branded company vehicles, which is a nice little advertising play. But it really allows them to control that last mile delivery, make it quick, as you said, Albert, but then also mix in other services like picking up returns, picking up boxes and other things, which people leave out for them. That can all occur because they own the full supply chain. And it's really difficult to do. They're now like the third largest private sector employer in South Korea, which gives you an idea of just like how many people are working with them and how much of a challenge it is as a business to build up that infrastructure.
For sure, for sure. And you can see this if you want to spend time looking at their financial statements and how they optimize their kind of working capital position, because they do take out, they do invest a lot of their cash in CapEx, which then they use to build out their logistics, like their physical infrastructure, but also their technology infrastructure.
I think this sort of floats into the next point I want to go to, Albin, which is like the comparisons of Amazon. When we were talking just before this, I mentioned I'm really keen on Coupang. You mentioned you're a little bit less so because of the low margins. One of the reasons I'm so keen or interested in Coupang is I can see that there's still a long way for them to go. I think the label of them being like the next Amazon is a little bit misleading because people might think that they're already there when there is like a huge gulf. So like their workforce is about 50,000 people and they're hoping to double it and be about 100,000 people by 2025. Amazon in the US alone employs 1 million people. So like the scale is completely different, which to me is like there's a big runway left in this company to expand. If they do become the next Amazon in Asia, that's a huge runway.
I presume though that is kind of skewed in terms of their business model. Like if you think about Amazon, the majority of those employees are going to be in distribution centers. But for Coupang, at least my hypothesis is the majority of those customers or those employees are going to be delivery oriented because you need to optimize for the speed of delivery. And a lot of these countries, because a lot of these companies in these countries and in Asia and Eastern countries have optimized for logistics and infrastructure. So they've probably automated a lot of the distribution where Amazon is only looking to do that now. And so I think that's the key difference in employee size is like Coupang can scale completely differently to Amazon. And this is why actually I love looking at financial statements for this, because what really impresses me about Coupang is their operating leverage. Like their total OPEX is like 25% of revenue, which is incredible for a business. And so if they've scaled their business with that kind of operating leverage while investing to build the infrastructure, like to me, it's like, what are they going to look like when they've completely built out the infrastructure in all the countries they want to play in?
So dive deeper on that, Albert. Explain to listeners, what is OPEX? Why is 25% OPEX good? The leverage part of it. Break it down.
Yeah. So, I can walk through a financial statement now for our listeners, but 100% you should go check it out. There's a great Twitter account called 10K Diver, which also explains this. But you go from revenue, which is the money you bring in, and the next line item is like cost of goods sold and then gross profit. So your gross profit will be the difference between the money that you bring in and the money that it costs you to sell those goods. For Coupang, because they operate a first party and third party marketplace, which is they buy and sell goods, they also offer their marketplace for other people to, you know, sell their goods on their marketplace.
Like eBay.
They've got a pretty low gross margin. So their gross margin is about 16%. And that means for generally speaking, they buy a product, they'll mark it up by about 16%. They sell it. So the difference in the price they've bought it for and the difference they've sold it for is about 16%. There's some delivery costs in there. So that product cost is probably a bit higher. But just to simplify this, that's what it is. Then they've got all the costs with actually running their business. So that cost is previously just the cost to buy and sell their products. Now they've got to pay for employees, HR, finance. They've got to invest in tech. They've got to invest in, you know, different parts of the business. Maybe they've got rent to pay, which they have a lot of rent to pay. That's all operating expense. And for generally speaking, for a business, especially an e-commerce business, like benchmark is like 40, 50% of OPEX because you've got to pay a lot of tech staff, you've got to pay for delivery, you've got to pay for, you know, all these different product innovation costs. Coupang have an operating leverage of 25%, which means to run their business, it only costs them 25% of their revenue, which to me is incredible because of what that means if they can change their margins. Like if they can increase their margin profile while keeping their OPEX the same, means there's plenty of opportunity, if they get it right, to actually be a profitable business. So effectively, you can think about it as like for every dollar of revenue that comes in, Coupang has to pay 25 cents to just run their business.
A really good explanation. I think it neatly moves us to, I guess, what would make Coupang successful? What are the keys to success for them? And you mentioned it. It's if they can make some parts of their business more high margin, that will hopefully flip the switch for them to become more profitable. Not that that's their goal at the moment, because they are still trying to penetrate the market, build up loyalty of customers, etc., and spend on their back-end infrastructure. But as you look at how they can become more profitable, get higher margins, Albert, what sticks out to you?
Well, I mean, I feel bad because I say this every time we talk about e-commerce business, but personally, it would be to strip away their first-party products and shift towards completely marketplace. Because if you're looking at marketplace, then you're taking a clip of percentage rather than buying and reselling, which is a higher margin business. I think to be a first-party vendor in the marketplace means you still have to compete on price or quality. And to get to quality, it means you have to make, buy, sell goods, which is a completely different core competency to running, you know, a giant e-commerce platform. So if I was running this business, I would probably shift closer to being a third-party marketplace with my winning and value proposition to vendors is we've got the infrastructure that you can leverage, which then brings a great customer experience for your customers.
Yeah, and how that might look on the back end, just sort of break it down for listeners, is, you know, if you're one of these e-commerce platforms where you sell Nike shoes, Adidas, all these other brands on your website, that's that third-party marketplace. You know, traditionally, you might purchase 1,000 pairs of Nike sneakers, warehouse it, etc., and then you bear the risk of whether that actually sells. And if it's not selling, then you mark it down, it's on sale, so you can get out the door and use that warehouse space more efficiently. Now things have sort of progressed where if it's just a third-party marketplace, Nike will perhaps lease out or rent space in your warehouses because they want to be at your warehouse so you can distribute the product really, really quickly. But ultimately, you haven't bought those sneakers from Nike. So if they don't sell, Nike bears the risk and all of that. And you're just, as you say, Albert, you're just there taking a clip of every product sale which goes on your website, and you're helping warehouse and distribute the product for your partners there. So it is a very different model. And in many ways, it does shift the risk onto some of these other brands. And you're just focused on making sure the platform's really good, making sure you've got a lot of clicks, a lot of people going through the platform, and then making sure distribution and delivery is on time and of a high quality.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't realize how kind of quantitatively intensive analyzing an e-commerce business is. But the key thing that I look at when I look at an e-commerce business is how quickly they're turning over their inventory, because e-commerce businesses should optimize for fast inventory turnover. Like, you can either be an e-commerce business that just ships volume at low price, or you sell one or two things at incredibly high prices. Like, that's where you need to play as an e-commerce business. Coupang, super impressive. They turn over their inventory 11 times in 1 year, which is higher than Amazon. Like, to be so inventory efficient as a business is incredible. And the reason why that's incredible is because when you're shopping online, product discovery is really hard. Like, no one's really gotten product discovery right. When you're in physical stores, you can just shove shit in front of people's faces, which makes product discovery really easy. But you can't do that. Like, no one's going to scroll to the last page of your e-commerce site.
Some people try, Albert. Some people are on their phones for hours scrolling. But that's indicative of no one's got it right, because no one would be scrolling for hours if product discovery was perfected.
Which shows not only the strength of Coupang's kind of machine learning algorithm, because if they're turning over inventory 11 times, they're showing the right products to the right customers, and they're also ordering the right products for the right customers. So I think this really shows the strength of, like, where they've invested, because as a business, they are more efficient than Amazon.
Yeah, I mean, 99.3% of orders are delivered within 24 hours, which is insane. I just got some new sneakers out from Culture Kings. I think it took about four
you
days.
You would. I don't know anyone who shops at Culture Kings, but there you go.
Took about 4 days to get here, and I just had to walk over to the local post office to pick it up because I wasn't home when they made the delivery. So, you know, there's pain points still with e-commerce, and Coupang have done a really good job of alleviating a lot of those concerns. Albert, I want to talk a little bit about this. There's some dark sides to the business, some concerns. One of the things is there's so much focus on the delivery. They have to get things out on time, etc. There have been a lot of scrutiny about, there's been a couple of deaths actually in their warehouse, a lot of workplace injuries. Just between 2019 and 2020 alone, their sort of worker-related injuries and illnesses have doubled to about 1,000 in a year, which is pretty huge. Like, that's a huge amount of workplace issues to be occurring. I mean, let's not focus on that, but I think really the takeaway there is this a sustainable business? Because for them to keep up with this quality-facing side to the consumer, it appears like they're really having to burn their workforce, which isn't a sustainable model.
Yeah, I think they need to take a kind of hard look at how they run their business and how they treat employees to make sure that doesn't happen. Like, it's not like they can't spend more to hire more employees. I think it's just their strictness on their cost discipline, which shows in their operating leverage. But they really need to think about how they treat their employees in order to deliver their mission, but also deliver a mission to their employees as well.
Well, it's interesting because, I mean, when you say work harder, I think it's a bit more difficult than that, because I think it's really in the frame of their business. Because I've watched some videos about Amazon drivers, Coupang drivers, etc. And it's literally like they have to deliver. They get given a truck of parcels in the morning, for instance, and they have to deliver those by 6 p.m. That's the sort of deadline. And if they don't, then they sort of get penalized for each package they don't deliver. And in some instances, those penalties can make it so that it's literally unprofitable for them to drive that truck that day. Like, they would have been better off staying at home, not working, because they just get penalized so much. And the issue is their truck gets filled up with more packages than anyone could deliver in that time frame. So I think there's some more structural things that need to be worked out of this sort of e-commerce delivery system. And the problem is, unfortunately, the problem is us as the consumers, because we just want more and more stuff delivered without thinking about some of these back-end consequences.
For sure, for sure. And, you know, when I say they need to work harder, I don't mean the employees need to work harder. Yeah. Sorry. I meant that Coupang as a business need to think about how they structure their operating leverage so that employees aren't being burnt out. Because if you're only spending 25% of your revenue on OPEX, like, if you increase it by 1 or 2 percentage points based on the scale of this business, like, that is a lot more people that they can bring to the table. And, like, no offense to Coupang, but, like, you're already unprofitable. What's an extra, like, couple of million so that your employees are being treated right to continue to deliver a great service to your employees and also your customers?
Anything else you want to hit, Albert, as we start finishing up?
Yeah, I think the really big one is, like, Coupang is not profitable and it's not cash flow positive. So this is a business that is bleeding cash. And part of it is because they've obviously got their huge cost structure. So they've got the CapEx that they spend. So cash coming out to build distribution centers, to invest in their tech. They've also got, you know, a lot of leases. So they've taken out, you know, leases in all these distribution centers. But I think it's worth noting that if they can successfully increase their margin profile, then they will start to get cash flow positive, which I think is a good sign.
Yeah. I mean, this is what I was talking about with that long runway, where with these sorts of businesses, and I haven't always been the fan of the unprofitable businesses, Albert, but where I think I've got a different view on Coupang is I can clearly see the narrative as to why they're unprofitable and how they will become profitable. And the narrative of why they're unprofitable is, as you say, is they're building logistics centers, they're buying trucks, they're leasing out properties, etc., which is usually an upfront cost. Like, if you buy a truck,
that's not true. The reason they're unprofitable is because they buy and resell goods. They're further unprofitable because they have all this CapEx. Like, their margin's only 16%.
CapEx is 25%.
No. Their CapEx is different because that's on balance sheet. No, that's cash.
Yeah.
But their operating leverage is only 25%. Whereas their cost margin is, 85%. So I don't think you can shrink 25% further down. They need to shrink the 85%. And that's where they become profitable, is like do you believe they can sell their things at a higher price? Probably not. So it's like, how do they make up their margin profile?
But they reduce their margin by, you know, if you buy a $100 million logistics center in the first year, and obviously that cost is distributed over 4 years, but you also expect after 5-10 years, you've got that asset and now it's just a profitable thing on your balance sheet from there moving forward. Like,
no, because you're still buying and reselling goods. Yeah, does that make sense? Right. So if you just think about, I'm buying product A and then selling it to the consumer for $5 more than I bought it for, like, they need to optimize for that, not where they're investing. Because where they're investing is a very small part.
I think they have to do both ends of the stick.
For sure, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. But once you outlay all their CapEx, like, that's still not going to move the needle on their profitability.
Maybe. But what will is having more customers with more transactions. Because even if you've got a low margin, if you've just got higher volume, and that's what you're optimizing for by having more logistics center, by having your branding awareness campaigns, etc., that's all about driving volume, creating a brand moat around your product so that they're sticky and then they stay on, and more people spend money through your platform.
It's hard to believe that though, Dan, because they've only got $3.5 billion in cash and they're spending, you know, $800 million each year on CapEx.
All right, Albert, tell me, what's your view of the future for Coupang?
Like, to me, it's you really need to shift where their core business is. Because you can't be first-party sellers because it's just so low margin when you're laying out so much cash. Like, I would accept it if this business was cash flow positive, but they're not. And so, to me, how do you become cash flow positive? Because profitability is just accounting, and they may never be profitable because of their CapEx spend.
Yeah, I'm surprised this is coming from you because it seems quite pessimistic. I know they're sort of low margin, but I guess I'm trying to think. There's been a couple of businesses where we've broken down and I've taken this view where it's, and I think Walmart was a good example. I don't care if they're low margin as long as they're sustainable, because as long as your margin is net positive and if the volume is very, very high, you will be a cash flow generating machine.
But this is cash flow negative. That's the problem.
At the moment. But I think that's because of a lot of the infrastructure investments they're making. And I take the point, as well as the sort of low margins on other things. But I don't think what you're suggesting seems to be they have to change the model. Whereas I'm saying, I think if they optimize the model, which usually when you're on this sort of journey, you know, you don't worry about optimizing at this point. You worry about optimizing a little bit later on once you've got a core set of customers really, really locked in and a certain size behind you. That's my view, where it sounds like, Albert, you're more like they really need to change their model in some way.
No, so they only have money because they IPO'd, and that's probably why they had to IPO. Last year, they spent $1 billion in cash and they made a net loss of $1.5 billion. Like, the only reason that this business is still going is because they went to IPO.
Yeah, but they're spending that money on centers, trucks, all this sort of stuff so that they can grow the business. It's an investment.
The spend on their business is only $600 million. Just running the business lost them $400
million. Yeah.
Does that make sense? Like, they ran a business and the total cash loss was $400 million. And their accounting profit was negative $1.5 billion. And so, like, I would never look at accounting profitability, because that's based on the rules. And maybe we can take this offline. But they bled $400 million just running their business. And then on top of that, they spent another $600 million to build things. So now their total net loss was $1 billion. That's $1 billion in real money that went out the door, not positive cash flow. And the only reason they had the cash to do that was because they went to IPO. It's like a venture business. You look at it like a venture business. And to me, it's unsustainable.
Of course, it's unsustainable if you project out that this is going to be them year after year. But this is part of the growing pains of growing into something bigger and better. But you're right. I think we've dwelled on this a bit much, Albert. Final verdict?
Look, I think it's a really interesting business. I would just want to see it
do what Amazon does and expand out to other product categories, because their core business is not attractive.
Not attractive to you, Albert. You have such an aversion to people buying and selling things at sort of a margin, because it's low margin. And I understand that. But like, so much of the world economy for hundreds of years has been essentially based on someone buys a product and then they sell it on to someone else for a higher price or whatever, because they're moving it between markets, or they're buying at scale and then selling individually, et cetera, et cetera. I don't have the same aversion to that business model. I think it can work. And I think the big runway which Coupang has, they're focused particularly in South Korea. But I think as they cement their status there and look outward, the really big potential there is that they're moving from what is quite a sophisticated regionality of Korea, high population density, phone penetration, high-speed internet, and then they can potentially leverage that into other Asian markets which aren't on the same spot of that curve, but they can help build up the infrastructure so that they can become major players in those regions. A little bit how Facebook goes into some areas of Asia and helps build up internet infrastructure, because they know if they help build up the internet infrastructure, users will then start using social media, and that helps Facebook. I could see Coupang doing a similar play in some of these other Asian regionalities.
Yeah, I think the other thing to worth it note is, like, to do that requires more cash and capital outlay, which is to me concerning.
I'll write them a blank check, Albert. I believe in them.
That was an interesting business regardless of its cost profile.
Yeah, we're going to have to take this offline, Albert. You really went in hard on Coupang.
They should run their business better.
All right. Thank you for listening to Fresh Capital, a podcast about companies and investing told in a refreshingly simple way. Thanks for listening. If you haven't already, rate the pod 5 stars. You know, we just got our friend Albert to re-rate us. I can't believe he hadn't rated us already. So if you haven't, please do, and we'll catch you next week. Have you ever wondered what it takes to start your own podcast? There's the microphone, of course, but then editing software, guests, video, audio, a lot goes into podcasting. But podcasting doesn't have to be a challenge. Zencastr's all-in-one web-based solution makes the process quick and painless, the way it should be. Zencastr is what we use for Fresh Capital because we're obsessed with quality. Zencastr is one of the only platforms to provide high-quality audio and video with every recording. And most importantly for Albert and I, Zencastr saves each audio feed locally. Having locally saved audio means it's easy to fix the moments we talk over each other in post-production. This means I can mute Albert's interjection whenever I'm making one of my amazing points. If you've thought about making your own podcast or have any friends trying out the trade, use our promo code in the show notes for 30% off your first 3 months. Thank you for listening to another episode of Fresh Capital. Every week, we provide a refreshingly simple way to learn how companies operate and how investing works. Just a reminder, all information contained in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as a substitute for professional, financial, legal, or tax advice. The hosts of Fresh Capital are not financial professionals and are not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Any opinions expressed in the show are not recommendations or advice. Please consult a licensed financial professional before you jump in. As always, we look forward to seeing you next week. See ya!